Thank you to everyone who came out to my last workshop all about how to reach out when you're feeling like a burden. And I think this is going to be one of those workshops that I do more frequently live to get more feedback and get better at talking on this topic in particular. It's very nuanced. There's so much to talk about there, everything from attachment to communication style and skills and emotions that come up and all of that. So I love talking about it. And if you're interested in coming to a live workshop so you can ask questions, that would be awesome. I will keep you updated about when that's coming up. Therapists and other helping professionals who want to do longer, more intensive one-on-one work with clients. This is something that I've started moving into, and I absolutely love doing therapy intensives. You can do this if you're a therapist, OT, PT. I know that some of you listen to this podcast and do really great work with clients, especially already in group formats. But for those who kind of want more in-depth, targeted, individualized work, a therapy intensive is perfect. And you can learn all about this in Stephanie Feld's Therapy Intensive Summit. It's May 13 to 16, and I'm speaking there all about chronic pain and illness intensives. It's a free 4-day event. So there's a bunch of us talking, and some of the other topics that people are going to be talking about include intensives with psychedelic psychotherapy, betrayal, trauma, relationship counseling, having a social justice centered practice, inner child work, financial strategies for therapists with Jenny Schlottmiller. She's awesome. I love being in her membership as well because she just is so knowledgeable about all things taxes and therapy. She's a therapist and CPA herself. So I'm really excited for that. There's a lot of people talking here. So grab that free ticket. Even if you're not sure which ones you can make it to, the ticket's free. So go ahead and grab that. And then if you decide that you want to upgrade to the VIP All Access Pass, that pass is $127. And that will allow you to have access to all of these videos after the summit is over so you can watch it at your own pace, and a private podcast feed of all the presentations so that you don't have to kind of sit at your computer. You can also listen to it on the go. You'll get presentation notes and a workbook, and you'll also have a chance to interact with some of the summit speakers during live panels each day. Each day there's going to be panels that are exclusive to the VIP All Access Pass holders. So if that's of interest to you, the people talking there will be talking about how to host retreats, integrating intensives with other healing modalities like yoga, nature, music, all of that, offering couples therapy intensives, building an intensive only practice, developing multiple streams of income, and BIPOC therapists building wealth. So those are just some of the topics. There will also be a live meditation and chances to be coached, as well as some seriously amazing resources that the VIP speakers have all contributed to the intensive. So if you're a VIP access pass holder, again, that's $127. All of the materials that you'll get access to individually bought add up to about $4,000. Things like the roadmap to retreat planning with Patrick Casale. Amber Lydia has a resource around time management and profit in your practice. We're talking betrayal trauma in the therapy room and how to diversify your income with Michelle Risser. Also, Letters to My Inner Child from Micah Miller. How cool. That's awesome. So again, the actual summit is free, but if you want all these extra resources and more time to watch the videos, then please feel free to use the link down in my description box to sign up for that. In the West End of Atlanta and virtually in New York, Orion Psychotherapy Art Studio Office holds space for adolescents, adults, couples, and families who are seeking to engage in a therapeutic relationship ritual with an open-minded, licensed therapist. Grounded in their humanistic praxis certification and their person-centered foundation from the University of West Georgia, they often encounter the lived struggles of trauma, gender sexuality, and loss with compassion, a direct and honest approach, and an interest in experiential expressive therapies as a means towards healing. Orion and I recorded this episode sometime last year. I have quite a few episodes. You might be noticing that were recorded last year and I was not able to upload until now. And as I was going back and editing this episode, I was just really blown away at how fluid and open our conversation was. We talked about emotions and defense mechanisms, life experiences, and how that all interplays with our chronic pain experiences. And the whole conversation is kind of the epitome of how to feel your feelings. If you can, watch this video on Spotify or YouTube because Orion's office is beautiful. I am obsessed with it. So you have to see it. Go to YouTube or Spotify to see that video. And conversations like this truly are exactly why I started this podcast. As I've been going through some old podcasts, I'm realizing that how I would talk about a particular topic today is a lot different than how I would have talked about it a year ago because growth, change, all of that. But it was really cool to hear my conversation with Orion and to realize that I wouldn't change a single thing about what I said or how I said it. This conversation feels like we just had it yesterday. So I hope you really enjoy this episode and please give any feedback if you're listening on YouTube. I would love to hear from you. Please tell me more about your space. I read online about it, but I'm blown away. It sounds like you have an amazing mission and just such a creative, beautiful, welcoming, warm space. So please tell me all about it.
Oh, so it's pretty much my first space I've ever had. It's in an old giant white church building in Westview, Atlanta, and it's been mostly converted to art studios. And I've always liked the vibe of like, whether being in a school or a church, that's like a kind of very Atlanta and other places, but Atlanta thing. And I like the idea that there's a lot of like energetic hub vibe going here with the studios. Before COVID, it was open door policy. So a lot of times I would have to go get my clients out of the hallway because they'd be talking to an artist or engaging. There's the cat that lived on our hall. And so, and I believe even there's just a lot of spirit. The church particularly was kind of like a children's school. So, you know, it's got some energy there and has a ton of plants. This is the rock lounge. So clients can just kind of, a lot of them more and more use it to be in their body in different ways. That's all client art that's behind them. Here, I can actually do a little more. This table is basically I keep watercolor in between my clients and a bunch of fidget toys, which again, just, it's not shocking, but just how many of them use fidget toys, giant fish tank. And then this is my kind of art corner. It's a lot of my paintings. I do cores, which we could get into with clients too. I often just say
What is cores?
Yeah. So I'll go there. And so, you know, part of what I would say is like, someone can just come to my office for an hour and sit in it. And that itself will be healing. I think of it as a psychological play space. And really what I want to present clients with is like, you have the choice to do something. So move, listen to your body. And even watching them switch from one place to the other or switch toys. And it's just this like, such at the heart of what we're talking about is like, remember that you can access awareness to do something different, tone in, oh, I want to sit differently. I want to play a different toy. And so much I can go into there. And cores, you know, started with the ideas of like negative core beliefs. And then I realized, oh, wow, there's positive core beliefs and neutralizing core beliefs, right? Like my bestie says, life's too serious to be taken serious. I love that phrase. And I'm like, no, you need to take it serious, right? But that's a neutralizing core belief to kind of release pressure. And through a lot of that work, I would talk a lot with clients about cores. And I ended up doing my own meditation one day. And I guess I wanted to get back before, as I say, and it's kind of like, okay, let's go back to like before, you know, all this shit in your body, right? And then it's like, okay, let's go to childhood. And then it's like, oh, wait, you don't have psychic barriers, whatever people are telling you, you're just like taking it in. Okay, let's go deeper, right? Okay, let's go to the womb. Okay, right? Original. And then it's like, wait, you're on your mom's chemicals and hormones. And what happened when she found out that she was pregnant? Was it good? Was it bad? How much stuff did she suffer through pregnancy? And then also, even if it was really good, like my mom went to a Diana Ross concert in New York Central Park while I was in the womb. Maybe that was a little bit too much for me. All the noise, all the screaming, all the, you know, dopamine and serotonin my mom was on. And maybe I was like, you know, literally like tripping in a way and even too much. And so I'm like, okay, let's go further back, right? Let's go back to the point of conception. And I'm like, wait, your whole body, your chronic illness, all this stuff is programmed into you. And then you have ancestral trauma, which I like really get into too. And it's like, wow, okay, wait, where's the beginning? Like, when are you not? And then I ask my clients, friends, people, myself, if you could just imagine what is right before that, right? Just honor that maybe there was a time, no matter what you believe in, as many lives as you want, that maybe there was a part of your soul and spirit that existed before this lifetime. And could you just imagine that that's possible, right? Just hold that space and allow your body, your mind to put something there, some object to hold that as a reminder at the center of this core. And you can change that later. You can put multiple things, whatever you want. And as I say, that's the whole point of this kind of core work, is to go and establish this place before all of this that you can tap into. And then I do work with them to draw it, to write about it, to buy things that represent it, like buy a shirt that represents it, right? Buy a charm that represents it, all sorts of things. So that, in what I like to say, is it becomes a somatic, imaginal experience and place. And over time, a lot of my clients, when they do this work, they now have a place where they can store and savor good memories, good learnings, good experiences. And I even say, like, my core, so it's liquid hot magma ball of that. So hot, it can even take the worst. So I can put the worst in there and it's still going to grow. And I can talk a lot about this. I love core concepts. But ultimately, like, in the end of the day, I'm trying to help my, I almost would like to think of it as like, it's a new organ inside the nervous system. And maybe if we were to call it the calm system, the core system, right? It's like reestablishing. And again, a very, in a way, imaginal, but physical somatic place that we can go to tap into.
Yeah, I'm thinking about just kind of internal family systems and that your core self, or in somatic experiencing, we call it the felt self, a felt sense of self. Like, yeah, I think we have different words for it in different modalities. But at the end of the day, it's a very physical experience. When do you feel most, well, I was going to say grounded, but that word I think has been used so much to like, as a coping skill. So I just want to clarify for people listening, like, to feel grounded is when you genuinely can feel the things that are happening around you. You can feel your chronic illness flaring up. You can feel the tension in the room. You can feel the conflict in your family, the conflict in your partnership, and still know who you are and still respond from a place of, this is my value system. This is who I am. You can have your feelings, you can have your emotions, but I'm gonna, like, and I can hear you and I can be with you in that while still knowing who I am and how I feel inside. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's this work that I can call core work, but is really just a heart of a lot of the therapeutic and nervous system reactionary work, is kind of really knowing that it will be better later. Like, I might believe different things later, right? In an hour, in a week, I know that that happens. And I may not be able to access that at all right now, but I have enough metacognition to know, like, so I say, my core knows. I've stored that in there to remember that. Even if I fully feel, one of my favorite pieces is like, just because we feel it doesn't mean it's real, right? And it might feel real. And that learning and that lesson is like a lifelong journey. But to be able to know, I fully feel like I'm being abandoned, I'm being cheated on, I'm effed up. And to be able to kind of be like, well, okay, I know there's this kind of process with me where I can be, I like to say, like, drugged. Like, our emotions are very complicated things. I don't love to always reduce it, but it's also worth reducing them down to chemicals, hormones, essentially drugs. Like, we are tripping on an experience, right? And our brain is a projection making machine. Like, it is this, that's it. And especially with the nervous system, its work is to project our own personal stored, which we could call trauma, right? Our really deep learnings, to project those to us, to protect us from them. And so the core self can kind of, like, again, just learn a lot about this and know about this. And I think that's such a piece of, a big part of my practice is psychoeducation. Because I believe the act of learning is so helpful in the experience of emotions and what people are coming here to, like, know, oh, this is what's happening, right? And I could talk so much about that, but.
Yeah, no, please do. You know, it's psychoeducation was never really my strong suit in the past. I didn't like teaching, and I still don't really like teaching when it comes to like skills or kind of teaching what I've read in a book or what I've learned. I kind of just like to be in the process with somebody who, but then I started to realize that it really just came from a place of when you first learn something and it actually, you don't know it well enough yet to explain it. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I was at. And now I recognize how important it is to have that cognitive piece. And the goal when I'm, and before too, I felt like explaining something to someone was they had to then believe what I was saying. And now I'm like, no, this is kind of knowledge that's here and it's for you to take or not take. And it might resonate with you. And if it does, you'll feel that in your body. And if it doesn't, you can also feel that in your body if you've trained yourself to kind of be aware enough of your internal sensations in that way. So everything that we go over, it's not about you believing what I'm saying or hearing me a certain way. It's just about what I know to be true for me and maybe for other clients. And then you get to decide if that's true for you or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing they say is like, why am I going to the workshops teaching me how to heal my clients and disorders, and why are my clients? And there was a period of time where I would get permission and take clients like, oh, this is a shame workshop. I know the exact client needs to come. This is a workshop on the gut biome and mental health. Like, this client has been teaching me about that and I brought her, right? And I think that nothing is controversial, but it is a little like outside the norm and could be controversial, but depending what's being talked about, like, yeah, are you talking about clients in a way that you wouldn't want a client here? Well, we might need to look at that, right? And there's layers to that, but ultimately, I think what I, as I even say, like, I went to this one workshop, I think Kathy Steele, and she drew on the board the nervous system. And that was after 8 years of therapy, it shifted something in me because I just had to know, and I'm very visual. So I had a very visual understanding of what's happening and being like, oh, that's what's happening when I'm having this attachment reaction. Like, I'm getting triggered. The drugs are coming through through my eyes into my thing. And then I'm feeling it. And then it's repurged. I was like, blew me out of the water. And it's just like, so I
totally.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. No, I resonate with that. Like, just kind of seeing the nervous system drawn out or learning about the nervous system, especially with chronic illness, because a lot of times clients here, go to therapy because this is stressful, or go to therapy because it's all in your head. It's like, actually, we are probably the forerunners right now of like teaching the general population about the nervous system. You have neuroscientists, but they're doing their research, right? They're in the research labs and maybe they're writing books, but this is really us. Like, we are the ones who are bringing this knowledge and in a very experiential way to our clients, which when you're living with a chronic illness, yeah, your emotions affect you biologically and your biology affects you emotionally. So we've got to figure out how to take that, what used to be very abstract, and kind of put it into a more concrete way of learning it. Then we can kind of go back into the abstract and make meaning of it and purpose and all of that.
We say that phrase again. I heard the second part, the biology affects the way you say that phrase again.
I think I said your biology affects your emotions and your emotions affect your biology.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, I just mean like your cortisol levels, your dopamine levels, your all of these things. It's not just happy equals dopamine. It's like, how much, I don't know, sugar you've eaten that day. And then that affects, how much, where the, what the chemicals are. And really, dopamine is a very simplified, kind of just catchy neurotransmitter that a lot of people know these days, but it's much more complex than that. And I think that's important to know, because I think sometimes it's good to reduce things down when it then allows you to understand the concept, but then we have to also not put too much stock in like, oh, well, I can't eat sugar because that affects X, Y, and Z. Like, yes, I just want to be careful there with my language.
Yeah, no, and I love that, right? And that's even your brain having enough awareness to do that psychological flexibility to be like, oh, wait, going too far. And that's part of what we want is to be like, oh my gosh, I'm having this whole experience where I'm, projecting my trauma in this moment. I can feel something's bigger. And yes, I'm just on drugs and chemicals. And people often say like, the brain is electricity. It's a little, it's more complicated than that, but it's a firing. It either fires or doesn't. But there's way more layers to that, so it can be complex. And then the body is more chemicals, right? So it's a dosage, it's water, it's fluidity. So it's this idea that like, once you get dosed, you can't just kind of turn it off. And with CBT, we can practice more of that idea in the brain. But ultimately, like if you get your body is trained to give you a minute of dopamine or a minute of depression collection, whatever that is for your own self in that moment, it might be a minute. I even think with shame, the dose of shame I often see is a reoccurring, like we might say, extended release. It's like every 10 minutes, it's going to remind you, it's going to bring you back. And for whatever reason, that dose has just been trained to return to it and go back to it and remind you. And you're like, well, I don't need this. And that's my metacognition. I don't need to do this. But then again, to be like, and the other side is like, and this is my body. And, you know, it's what it does. It reminds me. And it's just my work to like keep having the experience. And I like to say, you know, then in that moment, you come into creator self. And we work to have freedom, which is layered with reactivities. That's the definition of, like I say, classic reactivities. You're not there. You're not present. You're not aware when we're 100% in the phase. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I really like that, the concept of, I think it's important too, especially with chronic illness. You know, you're talking about shame, but whether it's shame or a flare up, like we have to think about, once you experience something, how long does that last in your body? So and the more you're aware of your internal sensations, the more you'll get a grasp on this. I think in the beginning, people can get really frustrated because, well, I don't know. Like, I don't have any awareness. I can't even tell you like how I feel right now in this moment. So we practice a lot of that. But then the goal is to figure out, how long does shame last in your body? How long does joint pain, like if your joint pain flares up, how long until like that flare up starts to die down a little bit? And the reason why that's important to know is because then you can know how to support yourself during that time. Instead of, like you said, where you kind of go like, oh, I felt shame. Okay, that's done and over. And then now all of a sudden it's popping up and I don't know why it's popping up again. It's like, well, that's just how long it takes to metabolize in your body. Like, it might need, you know, this downward curve and that kind of tapers down, you know, by the end of the night, or maybe it's a week. Maybe it's a week long process. And when we know that, it also decreases the level of fear around it, because it doesn't feel like, oh, this is permanent. This is always going to be here. I'm never going to get over this.
Even what you're talking so much here is like acceptance, right? So even if you're working to accept 10 hours a week, right, you accept that moment, or understanding, okay, I know this takes a while. I know this is what I need to do. You know, I know I have a chronic illness, right? That itself are releasing other chemicals, right? They're releasing acceptance or dopamine or, you know, I don't know, serotonin, right? But they're releasing whatever the acceptance chemical is, release, right? And that itself is so, and we can talk about like in the micro, like, or macro, in that experience, right? In a way, chronic illness is this really profound metaphor for reaction, and they can teach each other, because it is, you know, part of, as I would say, when clients come to me, it's very like, I don't understand what's what. I'm like tens or with zeros, or I'm fine or I'm not. And it's really, there's not a lot of fours and fives and six and eights. It's hard to really to know that. There's not as much, and there may be a lot of knowledge, but it's confused about what goes where, you know, and that. And I think ultimately, as I work with clients, chronic illness or reactivity, there's this process of starting to be able to like, oh no, that was a seven and that was a five. And as well, catching it earlier. And I think that's what I see a lot in my own work, you know, is this idea is if I can catch it earlier and start to do the things, whether it's accepting, whether it's knowing, okay, I have to take tonight off, or let me get my cramp bark tincture and take these, you know, this is the type I need, ibuprofen. Like, I can address it earlier. And I think sometimes when we're in that confusion, the reactivity, and we're not as present, we don't do the things to take care of ourselves. We aren't doing the things that are, whether they're soothing or whatnot, in reactivity or chronic illness, to address it, even though we can't control it, right? But we can try to engage with it in ways that, I don't want to say are healthier, but that's layered. I like healthier, but also we're just trying shit, and sometimes like mess it up along the way, and that's okay too, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, I've been using the word a lot, supportive, and kind of then also explaining what that means. Like, support, I think some people think that means like, to get rid of or to take care of, like, oh, you need support, you need help. Like, am I not explaining that correctly? But there's a very negative connotation with that word sometimes. But really, when you support something through, you're not getting rid of it, and you're not trying to even change it. You're just trying to like take some of the weight off of that whatever that process needs to be done so that it can actually do the process. It's not trying to do the process all on its own, and therefore it's less effective. So that's a bit vague and ambiguous, but in the context of what we're talking about, if you're having a flare up, or you know, you bring enough somatic awareness to your body that you actually know like what a level 5 feels like. Most of us don't know until we're in that level 10. Then you can start to say, like, again, take plans, you know, take this off my calendar tonight. Or maybe I need to do something else. Like maybe I need to add a social thing onto my calendar. Maybe I haven't seen my friends in enough, you know, in the last month, and that's really draining for me. So that for me, that as an extrovert, that's kind of what it usually is for me. And I think we just usually think about taking things off our plate. Like, well, sometimes like what can you add to your plate that's actually going to bring you a level of support so that this flare up or this cold or this emotion that you're dealing with doesn't feel so heavy?
I think one thing that's happening in my brain is like, so much of my own journey, which probably comes from some childhood stuff, is I look at things and I'll be 2 days into a cold and I haven't taken vitamins. I haven't, you know, done these things that I'm like, you know, or for a long time, like, or I haven't, you know, taken these tinctures that I will carry in my backpack that makes my backpack heavier. You know, one of my like chronic illnesses is I've had back pain, I would say nearly daily, every single day for over 10 years from an injury that I, two injuries that I had in wilderness therapy. And I can talk more about, actually, I don't know if I'm having days without it, but I have tightness and things. And even I've noticed myself, I'm rolling on a ball. Every time I'm in session, there's a ball under my foot. It just lives here. They live one in my house. I have one in my bag. That's part of my like support character or familiar. I saw myself stretching. It's like, yes. And so much I've even had to work through like stretching in session with clients, or I lay down a lot on this pillow because I can't really stand for a whole hour without the reaction happening in my body where my chronic illness, my pain comes in. And so again, and I've had to give myself freedom to like lay down in a session as a therapist. And that took years. We could talk more about that journey. Yeah. But the idea I was just saying is like so many times where I'm like, why didn't I access my supports that are right here? And I think part of that is because I'm stuck in the reaction. I'm stuck in some part of the chronic illness. I'm stuck in the pain. I'm stuck in the loss. I speak a lot about chronic loss. You know, whether I think it's very familiar with the chronic illness, but I see that a lot when people break up with partners, that partner's still alive. It's almost easier to deal with death than it is with like a chronic loss, which is like, yep, they're still there. It's still there. You know, whatever that is, right? The house that I didn't buy that's around the corner, like, a chronic loss, even though that's like over, it's, you know,
like there's like this possibility that it somehow could still be yours.
Yeah.
So I will say, like, one thing I do with clients when that comes up is we do talk about like, what would it be like to, in your mind right now, say like, actually that is no longer on the table. Like the option no longer exists. And to really try to feel into that, it takes a while to sometimes get that belief, because it's like, but it does exist. It's right there. And it's like, yes, it does. But for you, it no longer does. What do we do with that?
It can be helpful. It makes me emotional because I think there is that part of me, even though I've done this work, right? And here's the chronic loss. It's like, I can continue to admit, I will never have my body in this moment. I will never have my body back to where it was, which I've been an incredible like dance floor dancer, stretchaholic. I think that's such a big thing that comes up that I've done in my work. When I go to stretch, what's coming up behind it is none of this matters. None of this is going to get me to where that it's not possible. So, and I've had to do work in therapy specifically that's like to the place where I've done exactly what we're talking about. And I'm never going to get back there, except that move. But every step I take, every stretch I do, every time I roll, all of that is doing something. And even to the point where I'm like, even if it is 1 minute, downward dog between clients, or I walk the 40 steps to the bathroom, every step there, and that's a different modality that I've had to like be with. And I what you're saying, and even you can see, it's just like, it still lives in me in this way of like, that's so hard to accept.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I appreciate your vulnerability and just, being here with me right now. And I'm curious if, I know this was my experience, but did you ever have an experience where like that 1 minute was so, it felt so meaningless and not like worth it that you couldn't get yourself to do those small little habits? Was that ever a part of your experience?
I think I even went to a specific therapist that was body based because I was having trouble stretching. I still have trouble going to the gym. I absolutely know. And I can, you know, even this morning, I woke up 2 hours before this naturally and like had a great night's sleep. And I was just like, I know if I stretch even for 5 to 10 minutes, I feel better. And I ended up choosing to get into a shower. And then I was like, oh, you have extra time. So I did some stretching in the shower, maybe 5 of the 10. I would say that I don't know if I'm constantly, but like that is a huge part of the struggle is that it doing what I know to take care of myself. And I think because part of the reason is it's so attached to all the pain, all the loss, all of, you know, and so it in a way, there's just, you know, I also have a drive to just like keep going. Just like, I'd rather do the fun thing. I'd rather just lay it, you know, whatever that is, that maybe isn't as healthy for my back per se.
Well, I think when you do these things, you have to slow down. And when you slow down, all of those feelings come up that you moving quickly avoid. I just did a solo episode on this. And I will say the other thing that comes up for me is, this was true for my experience and for a lot of my clients too, but when you grow up in an environment that where you weren't helped, like, you know, it was like, God, I told you to brush your teeth a million times. Why haven't you done it already? Get in bed. Like, you know, in lots of reprimanding and, or just no one was there. When that was the case for you, the act of doing things alone now just brings up all of the grief and the trauma from when you were a child. And so for me, working out, well, it's interesting over the years, like I had so much social anxiety, I couldn't do group classes because that was too like around people. But as I worked through that, now almost the only way that I can work out is with people. I don't even need people to like, well, there was a point. So last year few years before, like I had to do personal training in order to get it done. I needed someone one-on-one with me. And it all this stuff is attachment related. I think I really needed to repair the part of me that didn't have that help with movement when I was a kid. So hiring a personal trainer was a part of my self-care, self-healing, all of that, because it wasn't so much about someone teaching me what to do. It was about somebody like literally holding my hand through it. I needed that. And so now I'm at a place where I do group classes at the place where I hired that personal trainer. So there's this familiarity and there's this like security in that. And that's been really, really eye-opening for me around like how to do these things on your own. I mean, in clients, like I have so many clients in PT, they're like, I know I need to do my exercises, but I can't do them. And I'm like, yeah, because you're trying to do them alone. Like, we are communal species. We're not meant to do this stuff alone.
And especially when what you're doing is navigating all of this, just like therapy, it's like having someone else there because otherwise, you might spiral off into places and stuff, you know, and find these blockages. And I once saw a video, something on MTV or something, and this like weight commercial about working out. The guy was like, I've learned that I'm someone who has to work out with someone else. Like, so I have to pay a personal trainer. And that was like, that's what I need. And I did that for years. And I think as you were saying, like, I love how much you're opening me up to attachment is in this, because it's not something I'm as aware of. And I think such a peace of mind is this idea that I'm going to re-hurt myself, right? And so part of having a personal trainer is I'm like, he's a good friend. It's like, he's there to literally think, up your back, up, are you focusing on your core, right? And I'm always like, no, but my energy is navigating these other places or in a dissociated state where I'm just like trying to get through this or I'm like in this awareness of literally how each movement is about to hurt my body, or I'm just like so hyper in that experience, waiting for the signal to say, yep, that's not good, that's not bad, drop that, you know? And so, so much of that, I go deeper, it's like, yeah, it's about me re-hurting myself. And just how many times I've been to yoga, and sometimes I'm like, wow, that was amazing. Other times I'm like, wow, I'm going to be in pain the rest of the day. And I'm like, what was the difference, you know?
You are describing my experience to a T, and my husband's a personal trainer. So this has been like definitely a source of tension. I always say like, do not work out with your partners because it brings up all the attachment stuff. And also like, yeah, you know, you're Yeah, and he would be trying to tell me what to do, but he didn't grow up with trauma, so he could not understand how, like, it was, I had all this other stuff in my brain, which I just, the way you just, like, described that is literally my experience, and I don't think I've ever verbalized it that way. This is why therapy is so important, because there's so many layers to this shit, and the therapist, it's not about us having all of our shit together. It's about having that other person who can look at the pieces that you can't look at because you're too consumed with, like, you have to be consumed with what's right in front of you. And so we, as the therapist or the personal trainer or the helping professional, get to look, we hold that privilege of being able to look at the other parts that you cannot look at while you're focused on looking at what you need to do right now in this present moment. So, such as, you know, yeah, not moving a certain way so I don't hurt myself, or, yeah.
I think in this other side of what we talked about, which I could just, like, we could spend so much more time, is, like, the idea that I personally, not only is my life's one of my meanings and purposes to be born this way, study this way, to be like an elven queer healer, like, that is my channel, you know, whether planets or not, like, my four planets deep in Scorpio, I'm deep. I live in that depth, and I feel more alive when people, and I say this gently, like, are doing their trauma work, because I know this is the place of healing. I know, and that darkness is heavy, but it also, like, it activates me in a way that I can be so present in. And so, like, you know, we can get into, like, yes, intuition and my, like, my own purpose, but, like, I've spent my life studying this. So another part of that is that knowledge and being able to break that down and transition that and help people understand. And we talked about some of that. I think that's the last piece I'd say is, like, and the reality, because I'm not in what you were just talking about, I'm not in all of that. I have, and I think it's a privilege, it's an offering, that it's a shared relationship that I can hold these things that I'm like, oh, here's that theme again. Oh, here's this, right? That there's this kind of way that I can kind of be like eagle eye view, you know, to these things. And then I can bring those back down and be like, oh, here's how this, and there's so much, I think, in this work that's what I'm doing after that. It's like, is it like Mission Impossible? Like, I feel like there's like an invisible screen in my brain's just like, okay, there's that core stuff. Oh, here's the family stuff. And I'm kind of tracking it all while they're having this experience and being with them. And then kind of, you know, knowing, like, once it's all said, kind of being like, okay, what's most important, right? What needs to happen? Is it something relational that has something to do with all this, you know, insight? As I say, insight's great. It's 30% of the work. Like, it's all actually action and moving and choosing and trying and then creating a greenhouse, a safer container with your inner critics and with trying and with messing it up and with knowing we're never going to get it right and we're a prototype of ourselves. Like, that's a huge part, I think, of the work a lot that I do, is like the container of the psyche and what's going on in there. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, that was all beautiful. Yeah. And then even like somatic work, you know, moving in session or doing art or anything that takes you kind of out of your brain allows you to integrate this stuff so that you can do it. Like, if you're just sitting there thinking about it, you're just in your head, we heal in community. We heal in relationships. And it's because of all the things we're talking about right now. And you just cannot recreate that on your own. You can get far. Like, you can get far reading all the books and thinking about it and journaling and doing all that stuff on your own. Lord knows I did. But at a certain point, you will get stuck. You will be able to move any further. And it's because you need people, whether that's a therapist or, you know, just your friends that are also on this journey or a mentor of some sort. Like, it doesn't have to be therapy, but we are therapists. So we're going to be talking about what that's like in therapy. So.
And some piece of that for me, day one, one of the things I say is basic level magicians just think about it, do more, write it down, say it out loud to yourself, even just saying, well, why did I just do that? Or I'm having back pain, right? It there's something magical about that, right? Some people might call it kind of manifestation, that gets a little poppy. And then even further, if you really want to take it, is the acts of creation. Cook about it, make a altar to your chronic illness and healing of it, right? You know, whatever you express yourself through, it doesn't have to classically be art, plants, right? There's so much stuff that I like to say it could probably be anything, but it's the intention of it. And I love what you're saying. And I do believe, from what I understand, we're like a community-based species. So like, we were out there being scared and we'd come back to our you know, community, and that is the social engagement factor they talk about in polyvagal theory. It's like our body's like, oh, we have this, right? And such a big part of therapy, I think a lot is like, they are using that skill of another person, and that itself helps them to stay more engaged and less. And so sometimes they will channel spiral off into the reaction, which is also part of the workup to say, part of it is confusing. You're going to show me the mess and I want you to like go out, and we're going to practice this newer skill of like not fully going in and kind of the dance of the fire. And my last piece I would say is like, I also speak a lot about connection of other things. And I think art can be that, you know, I like to say the spirit of things, like some of this work, like the felt sense exercises, like you feel your pain or anxiety, whatever the felt sense is, for a few seconds of consciousness, then you go to something else, right? That could be another part of your body that feels different, but you can even go to a tree, right? And then you connect with the tree and you're like, oh yeah, trees are, wow, they're majestic, they're big. And then you come back and it's like, oh, does that feel different? And then you do that again. And this time you evolve the thing. You shake your hands or you feel the tree grow and bloom. And then you come back and you can do that a few times. And most times people do that. It's not that it goes away, but it changes gears, right? And I think the spirit of the tree, the spirit of connection can be your pastimes, can be, you know, even I would say ancestors, right? These like really other things that are still connective, right? And so there's so much in that level too that I think, yeah, can be that, that we can kind of take with us in a way.
Yeah, I think what all this keeps coming, bringing back up for me is fear of pain, which again, like, so being around somebody who has some knowledge, it's not just be around anybody that would reduce your pain, but having somebody who understands pain and you trust them inherently starts to reduce your pain. One, when we're around people who we trust, it evens out our heart rate variability, and that's associated with pain levels and how we, our body feels pain. So that's part of it, is just being around people that you trust. And people you trust could be either because they're emotionally safe, or it could be like you are with your PT and you like genuinely know that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
If you're with a PT and you feel like they don't quite get your body, you can do a lot of exercises and still feel like hell at the end of it. So that's where some of this emotional.
And feel scared that they're like, oh, this person isn't being aware. This person isn't telling, you know, like, and even day to day. I know that there's times that my PT was on it, and then there's days we're talking and because we're friends, like, you know, and I can feel the fear of like, you know, awareness, like, oh, you're not as present here. That's interesting to look at the therapist model. I love, like, I'm even like, yeah, what chemical is that, right? Trust, you know? And again, I like to call the chemicals just emotions, because that's better than constantly saying dopamine and serotonin and norepinephrine. And like often right. That one day, these are all over my place and I use them with clients all the time, that this feelings wheel we could, and it's different for each person, would have a different set of emotions or chemicals that we would, you know, and that itself, it's like, oh yeah, each moment we're experiencing these things. And then even to look into chronic illness and to really, that's like the step, right? Get, okay, when you're feeling the chronic illness, where does that go next? What emotion? Okay,
right.
Fear, loss, you know, confusion.
And this is such a good point, like with somatic work, because so I'm specifically trained in somatic experiencing. And we talk a lot about like, can you track, you know, from sensation to mood to affect to behavior to thought, right? And usually whenever we feel an uncomfortable sensation, we immediately push it down. And so therefore, we just feel the one thing, we push it down, we move on about our day, and then it hurts again. And later, we become very familiar with this one part of that experience. But when you start to open up the experience to all of the different things, the mood, the thoughts, the sensations, the images that go along with that thing. When you first start doing this work, it feels chaotic because it's ping-ponging everywhere and you don't know what the pattern is of like where it goes next, which is what you were just talking about. When you feel this thing, where does your body go next? Where does your mind go next? You don't know because you don't have experience with that. And so my job is to help give you a container so that you can experience that in a safe space, but know it's still going to be uncomfortable because you're ping-ponging all over in your body in a way that you're not used to. Eventually, once you start to recognize what the patterns are with those ping-pongs, you realize, oh, that's not chaotic. There's a pattern to it. I now know the pattern and this feels really safe. And I actually don't need this external container anymore because I understand it.
And I have enough awareness to be with it in this moment, knowing the themes, the patterns, and being able to be like, to kind of do that surveillance of what you just said, like my classic, What am I feeling? Just think about this, label at least four, and I want full spectrum, not just negative. There's often these, you know, even like when we're crying, there's the good ones too, even in the back of trauma, like there, you know, there's hits of like when you're angry, yeah, there's hits of release and like that, you know, so we can go to that. Felt sense, where do I feel it? Give me a physical description. Knot in my throat, tightness in my back, you know, weakness. And the other one I go to, and you added some that I love, is the thoughts, right? You know, and just like, just watch as I have to say, it's like, objective observer, just like no judgment, no solving, no analyzing, just collect the data. These are the feelings. This is the felt sense. Like, right. Because when we do those, which I call survival strategies, you know, then we just go into, you know, well, let me analyze. Why am I like this? Let me solve this. Like some of that. And again, that's important, but depending how deep your reactivity is, right, you might want to just slow those down first, right? And not, you know, because now I can get into all that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I think there's this place, I did this workshop with the American Academy of Psychotherapists, and I don't remember the exact name, but it's like the path towards ritualizing, whatever, the path towards healing. And we really got into this place that we're talking about, this like really in the details, really in that moment when I'm like, oh shit, the pain, right? And I think you're right. A lot of times I don't want to go there. That's so much. I know that that place is a repetitive torture chamber for my experience. And so there's an automatic kind of push away or dissociation. But what this other side of the work is to go in there, be with that in a gentle, slow way. And then in this really like what feels micro, but is also like ecstatically big, is to do something different, right? To try, because there are a lot of associations in there, right? And even in this workshop, in this podcast moment, like watching myself, the meta of like having pain, having love, I'm doing this ball thing. I saw myself stretching, and then I was like, don't use your cups, right? And then it's like, no, wait, this is the theme here, right? And using these cups and even like, I know I'm not going to be able to stay up for an hour. So I'm like, going to lay down a moment. It's like, there's something in it, but not only to say that there's joy there, that I'm taking care of myself and that I'm doing that. And does it make my pain go away? No. But now what's happening is in those moments of pain through my work, there is this availability, accessibility, capacity to reach for healing. Reach for my support things, stretching, cups, engaging with this. And then as I do that, I also am experiencing joy that I'm like actually doing that. And now I'm starting to associate my pain with joy. And I think there is phases of my own work where I really overdid it, where I was like, when I feel pain, I'm going to go as hard as I can towards this is helping me be a better therapist. This is helping me slow down. This is, you know, whatever, just like creating some joy energy in there. There's a lot in there, just the idea of like reassociation and rewiring. And I think that, you know, because yes, we know a lot of pain is, it's not a good place. And that's a lot of chronic illness work, is getting in those details and going through phases of commitment to like rewire that experience. Because I think we know that once you have pain, if you go into anxious or you go into loss or tightness or even dissociation, those things often cause more pain. And so, you know, there's kind of such a journey with chronic illness work and with reactivity in the large sense of like having enough awareness, knowing what's going on. And I say, like, I usually tell my clients, like, don't do anything for the first 3 weeks, just study it, just have awareness. Don't try to change it and figure it all. And the old classic metaphor I use is like this show that, you know, there are a bunch of misfit of bandfits go around and they are trying to attack the castles and they keep losing, right? Then they just ask the drunkards to lead this battle because it's their castle, it's their village. And they're like, you know, yeah, why don't we just like sneak in there? We wear the right, you know, peasantry look, and we'll have a week, and then we'll come back out with all the info. And then, of course, classically, they go in, they figure out what the ammunition is, the food. They figure out, oh gosh, there's this, you know, pagan holiday. They're going to have a feast. We know where the king will be. And then they go in and win. And then all of a sudden they start putting these people who know, and they start winning. And I think that is such a great place of this idea of what we're talking about. Go in, slow down, get to know, feeling, felt sense. Associations are huge and endless insight, right? What's really in there? What am I afraid of? And what am I having to deal with? And And then once you get a really good detail, then you kind of make the plans of action that are very often physical support, but emotional support or what you need in those moments that correspond to all that stuff. I would say emotional, but more all that emotional gooky associations and attachments and things that are in there.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Einstein had the quote, it's my favorite quote, and it's if I had an hour to solve every problem, I would spend 55 minutes thinking about the problem, like observing the problem, and 5 minutes thinking about the solution. And it's the same thing with our pain. I love that the castle metaphor. Yeah, you go in, you observe, like, you know, you want to know your enemy because then you know what it's going to do next. And that's kind of, I don't really love that metaphor because our pain, yes, it can be an enemy, but also we can start to associate joy with it. And that's really important. You don't want to be fighting your body, yeah, but yeah, we have to be observing what's happening before we can really make any decisions about what to do with it.
And maybe I would switch the metaphor to like observing your garden for season. Don't pull out all the weeds. Some weeds are gorgeous and they grow in the corners where nothing else wants to grow really beautifully, you know? So it's like, oh, wow, they're going to fill that whole corner and make it look gorge. You know, and there's so much in that and just watch. Yeah, like that. I could love that. There's, I think, another like what the idea of trust that you were talking about when I think in IFS, right? If I look at parts of myself, such a journey in a relational way is developing parts of myself that support myself, whether the emotional work around my chronic illness or the action or the understanding and how that does take time and work. And it's kind of exhausting, but you know, because it also doesn't ever fully heal it, it is a process. But then I start to have this relationship with myself that is supporting of myself, that does know more, that, you know, that again, it is more like, it has that like, the more of a polycommittal is a word I use a lot, but a psychological flexibility voice, right? It's like often what I'm trying to internalize as a therapist into my clients. You know, this idea of, hey, it's okay that it's never going to fully go away, but it's a journey. Just keep trying. Like this place of understanding, acceptance, that voice to me is like so huge. And I could like, you know, even spend all day. Psychology Today just came out with an article by Stefan, the guy who does ACT, and 250 studies. What are the three top things that they came to that made long-term therapy change? Awareness, psychological flexibility, right? The capacity to hold balance and multiple truths, which is frontal lobe, which we have a hard time accessing when we're in our reactive selves, right? So we talk about core self, grounded self. I can hold a lot of truths when I'm there. And the last one was values, which I thought was really interesting. That one kind of like makes sense. But yeah, the psychological flexibility one is one that just like, I don't know, just fully turns me on and has done justice for my own consciousness. And I think just like a, you know, reactivity. And if we look at the idea of chronic illness from that place, when you're really in the pain of the chronic illness, right? The reactivity of it, we aren't often in the psychological flexible place. We aren't in the place of multiple truths. We are in this place of pain and suffering, and it's never going to end. And I hate this. And confusion, which we didn't have an open, but like the idea that you're supposed to get help from others in the medical field and spend all this money, and that's place worth dissociating from, you know, like, so there's just, yeah, it feels less psychologically flexible and more of like a reactive spiral.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of people these days, I think, especially like coaches and like less attachment based folks are using it in a way that's like, okay, like what are your values? So how can we help you get there, but from a place of kind of committed action? So like just commit. But in my work, it's like, well, we're not going to commit to anything until you feel safe in like where you're at right now, which is very Rogerian, right? Curious paradox is that you can't change until you accept where you are. And that part, just it's long and it's drawn out and it's hard. And that's why when we're working with acceptance and it's really, really hard, I think it almost always comes back to childhood trauma, because what happened in your childhood? What were you told about how long it took you to figure something out? What were you told about your pain, your normal pain as a child? What were you told? So this goes into some of the core beliefs, but it also is the physical sensations, right? So as soon as I feel tired, if as a kid, I needed support in falling asleep, but instead my parents said, no, go to bed, stop getting up. Well, as soon as I feel tired, now my body feels unsafe. And if my body feels unsafe, now my chronic pain is flaring up. So like, there's just so much attachment work here, and it's complex and layered and nuanced. And I love it. I love like being in it with clients and trying to figure it all out, but it's hard. And so we need those resources during this time. Like, what's going to keep you here when it is really hard? And for some people, that's going to be the knowledge, the psychoeducation. They have to know like what's coming in order to stay there. They have like, they just need that cognitive knowledge. Other people don't really need that as much. They just need to know that I'm not going to get frustrated with you when you're not doing it fast enough. Like, I can hold that that calm patience and nurturing.
And I'll be that container.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Which, so, you know, unconditional positive regard. I'm going to hold the bubble that, you know, that we're trying to help your brain start to integrate and internalize.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Building trust is hard. But it's really, it's the thing that's necessary before you start to go into trauma work or really even like childhood wounds and attachment and stuff like that.
And trust, as I say, is multi-layered. It's not this binary, like, you know, again, psychological flexibility. It's, I have certain trust for myself. And then there's others. I don't trust myself to get my support around my back. I don't trust myself because I see moments where I'm like, Orion, you had this thing and you're all over your house is like tinctures and healing things and you're not stretching. So there's like not this trust that I'm going to take care of myself. And yes, I think kind of exactly what you're saying, like my model and my family of origin is like my father basically saying you're going to be fine, right? And my siblings, we all have this idea that the stomach aches, they don't matter. None of this matters. Like they thought I was joking when my appendix was going out, or I didn't want to go to football practice, which was also true. And we could have been listening to that. I was crying on the side every time I took out the garbage because I did not like the torture of, I didn't mind football. I didn't like football practice. And So they waited and waited. And then literally they thought my appendix had already ruptured, right? And here's the model of like, you know, we don't believe you. We're not listening to your body. Toughen up, right? You know, and again, I can be understanding too that part of that is they didn't want to go to the doctor. They didn't have the schedule. They didn't want to spend that money. They didn't want to. And a lot of stuff turns out to not be anything, right? And so it's, you know, there's a lot to that. That again, I could go into their own attachment stuff, their own stuff with pain. Like, yes, I can. I know my father's military father taught him a lot to ignore the pain and push through it, right? So, you know, Yeah, if I'm the chronic illness of my father in the metaphor, as I show up with pain, right? It's like, well, yeah, the model is my father is going to treat me very similarly to how he treats his own pain.
Push through. Don't make too much noise about it. And if you do, I'm just going to tell you, like, it's all good. And so therefore, when something was wrong, the message... So we can talk about like core beliefs and stuff. And I think that's a big part of it. But for me, I think my clients, like they've already done a lot of that and like trying to change how they think about it. And so I kind of go into like, okay, you know that there's a bit of self-worth about here, but there's also just like a very simple nervous system, repetitive action thing that happened that now we have to undo. So you, it was pain. And then somebody says, not worth looking at. And so you were literally just never taught how to say, here's how we go to the medicine cabinet and take some Tylenol. Here's how we call the doctor and go to the doctor and drive to the doctor and listen to the doctor and follow up with the doctor. Like you just didn't have the neural wiring to do those things because it wasn't taught to you. So now as an adult, you know, that's what you're supposed to do, but you didn't have someone holding your hand to say like, this is how we do this. It's like tying a shoe. If you just you tell a kid how to tie a shoe, I told you how to do it. I told you how to do it. Like you have to show them. You have to use your hands and show them how to do it. You cannot just give them a book or tell them the words of how to do it.
You can choose to create that pattern for their own nervous system that isn't a one-time showing how to do the shoe. And you're going to remember the larger pattern. And maybe there were moments they did that. That's not what I remember. That's not the majority. That's not what was taught into me and associated with my own pain. And again, the layers of ancestral, and that's, you know, we can get into that and so much of that. And I love this other side is like, even I feel you doing the work with me, like so much of something that's like hard for me to go around, but I know is a truth, is that such a big reason why I sustained my inner injuries is because I was afraid to go to my bosses to tell them that I needed a workers' comp case because I thought workers' comp was for bad workers. Like, that was the last thing they wanted, right? That, like, image of my father being like, last thing we want to do is go to the doctor or deal with that. So, and even, you know, that I waited till I couldn't even sit for 10 minutes. I also didn't have insurance. We could get into that, right? But would I have gone to the doctor anyways? I don't know, maybe. But, and so I didn't have insurance. And then I waited. And then I could talk about how then I went and something else happened outside of me to sustain the worst injury. But like that model, it's like, yeah, I was exactly what you're kind of saying. And, you know, and it's, I loved even like hold space. Like my father was the one eventually where he was like, no, workers comp is okay. Like, it's okay for you to do that. And I was like, oh, and I like went and told him and they treated me mostly great. And it's just like, you know, but there's such a model of even how my injury got so much worse and happened was because of the same things we're kind of like talking about.
Yeah. That's the thing too. When we start talking about these, you know, things we learn from our parents, it's never about blame. Truly. That's not just a, you know, a nicety. Like they learned what they learned, and also what they did to you or taught you really might not have been intentional, or like that's kind of irrelevant, but it's not even so much that they were trying to do a certain thing to you or not do a certain thing for you, but this is just what they knew. And then the way that your body internalized that is now kind of our burden to carry into adulthood. And sometimes you get the beauty of a parent who also learns with you. And now there's kind of this repair that happens. And other times we don't. And so what do you do with that? You're allowed to be angry about that. You're allowed to feel all of that. And you should feel all of that because that's how we metabolize it. And then we look at our value system. We look at our support system and we bring that psychological flexibility in so that we can make new decisions and be different people than what we currently are.
And this is what I identify, I language as the skeleton structure, whether chronic illness, whether trauma, whether anxiety, whether how to do with your families of origin stuff, the skeleton structure is very similar. You realize, ooh, this doesn't feel right. Bring awareness, slow down, start to name the feelings, the felt sense, what's coming up, start to look at the associations, right? And it feels like the same kind of model of work, regardless through them. And yes, you have to like, as I say, it's the skeleton. Now you have to apply the organs and build the whole body, you know, body of like of knowledge and action around it. And then we move in a hopefully the greenhouse, right? The acceptance and the understanding that you're not going to get it right and it may never fully heal. Like, you know, we move towards action and learning. Wow, that worked well here. Okay, this didn't. And you know, starting to separate out the waters. And I love it. It's like that we see that just showing up here. And there was even a moment I kind of like I wanted to say something like trauma is a chronic illness, probably for all of us. And the idea that these really deep learnings happen are another idea that a chronic illness, I think most of us, if not all of us, are suffering with is how the nervous system learns. And then how it overly protects us sensically. I get it, eons, and it's also confused. And we're all suffering with that chronic illness.
Yeah, which to me always comes back to just the lack of support. Like we don't have a communal way of being in this country. It's not our culture. But like we were never meant to do all this alone. We were never supposed to live with some people don't even have this, but we were never supposed to live with just the nuclear family, mom, dad, two kids. Like even that is, there's too much to keep up with in a house and on land and within your family, emotions, everything that has to do with raising a family. It is way too much for two people, let alone one person. And we do the best we can in that, you know, this isn't about, if you're in that situation, this isn't about looking at it and saying like, oh, we're wrong for being this way. It's more about just know that when things are really, really hard, there's a reason for that. It's because this was always too big of a task for any one person to do on their own. Raising a family, processing trauma, that requires you to be around other people who can help carry that burden.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, and then also for you to be able to help carry others' burden, other burdens too. It's not just about us being on the receiving end. It's reciprocal.
once you kind of have those learnings and things, and even if you don't, trying to help someone again, you'll learn along the way together. And even if you both suck at it, I love the metaphor of that, because the idea of us meaningfully potentially of supposed to live in community as families. And I think so many of us like wish for that and know that and are aware of other cultures that do that. It's a metaphor for our own inner brain. If you only have one voice in your brain, that's kind of, we start talking about two parts of ourselves. Okay, right. Then we talk about multiple selves and psychological flexibility, because naturally in a community, you're going to have voices that care for you. You're going to have all these opposing voices, and you will gravitate to what you need. And if they all are talking to each other too, or neighbor can say to your dad, hey, this seems serious. You know what? You don't want to take him to the hospital. I'm going to do this. I got the day off, right? You would start to have this psychological flexibility model as a child that we could, right? And so there's that. And I think the other piece that I really live with a lot, I love what we're saying, is, and I think it's Jennifer, and I think the last name is like Decolonizing Therapy. It's a book about to come out this year. Her work is amazing. And this idea that so much, and you were like hinting on this, is that our society, and I don't love, it's hard to say that it's like built wrong. There's so many layers to that, but we can get caught up there. But it's this idea that we are in a society that there are so many external environmental things, such as the nuclear family and these other things, capitalism and these things, that I could talk a lot about. Can't wait for her book. But one piece for me is just, we are being told that we are the wrong ones, right? Even the idea that DSM and our diagnosis, they don't speak about, what I think is so present on my teens, especially my queer and artistic teens, and my parents want to do family work. It's like, yes, the parents are so learned and traumatized about having to live this life and do this and do the job, and that they're just trying to like do their best to teach the kid, yes, get the grades, do the thing, because that's the thing, and you just need more money, and like, this is the thing, or whatever their own version of saving is. Hey, who cares about grades? Like, just enjoy yourself. Let's do the free stuff, whatever their channel is. And so just this idea that I think so much these days and talk to a lot about my clients, like, this isn't just you. There is an environment that we live in society that is very unsafe. It's very harmful and it's very hard. And there's a lot of things that we're forced into. And this idea that another lens we need that's birthing in these time that has probably been there in the past is this idea that like looking at through our diagnoses as a response to the environment. Yes, you're anxious because look at the things you have to deal with, right? Yes, you're depressed because, as I say, the pressure of the deepness, it's incredibly deep. It makes sense. It's going to crush you, right? And looking at it more from this decolonized place.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. Because when you know that there's a supportive team around you, a community, when you think about being crushed, it's uncomfortable, but you know that there's somebody who's like there so that you're not crushed to death. It's like, you know that the crushing, somebody else, while you're crushing under something that you should be, trauma, something that, you're the natural human response is to be crushed under that scenario. Then there's a community of people taking care of the things that need to be taken care of so that your life can still be sustained. And that is what we're really missing. Like in this country, if you can't pay for all that extra help, then you don't get it. You don't have
it. Restricted unless you're married, unless it's your family till 26. You can't be on a felt insurance. Like, I should be able to be on insurance with my community members that I'm sharing my sickness with. The people I'm getting COVID with should be on the same people that are on my insurance plan. And no, you can't share that finance, or you can't say that. You can't even typically share a job. I mean, why don't we have four people with the same title co-sharing the job and ideas and doing that? It's like, there's layers to that, but it's just like, yes, we are forcing people into individualism in this way that's really intense. We could talk about even the idea, you're allowed one partner. What?
Right.
Yeah. So that's your channel and vibe. I'm so here for that. And you should be allowed to have as many as you want and financially supporting each other, tax, if that's your truth. And there's so many layers to that. But yeah, I love your commitment to support. And I, from the outside, am kind of sitting in this one place of like looking at your theory of change and also kind of like how that's developing and like, yes, yours is going to be your own words, and you're the one that fits your own model of existence and experience and trauma. And how much support is a thread in yours? And a little bit of me that, like, if I wasn't there myself, I would be like, okay, what? You didn't get that support. And maybe you didn't. So damn good that you're like, yes, that was the moment, and we could do work there. And then I'm like, oh, and I can't pull my own thread from this exchange, right? Because, like, you know, I'm too in it. I'm too caught up in it. And even just like my own curiosity, like, what's the thread you keep hearing me say, right? Like, is there this like thread through my theory of change? And, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
All I'm talking about is like, I can't kind of get so eagle eye view that I can be like, this is a thing, Orion, that you're like, keep returning to.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? Because in community, that's how we find those eagle eye threads. So it's, you know, this is the whole point. It's really one of the whole points of this podcast too, is like to find these threads and to have conversation. Like, this is how we learn about ourselves and learn about others. But yeah, well, so to pivot just for a second and then I'll kind of come back to that. But as you were talking about my thread of community, the reason why I was so ecstatic to talk to you is because, and we really haven't talked about like your studio too much other than in the beginning with like your individual work with clients. But I'm trying to remember exactly what you wrote on the form, but you have a communal aspect to your practice, right?
Yeah. I would say that like in my own life, I have I'm heavily community focused. I am part of intentional community for a decade and a half. That practices a lot of this and is such a part of this. And I'm very privileged to have a very strong, big community that, you know, takes a lot of work and has a lot of what we're talking about in, and openness and acceptance is like the heart of our community. And, you know, in a way, like I practice certain things. This is what I've been calling the mutual core. It's an option for clients to paint their core or any sort of core they want without knowing each other, right? And here again, here's these codes of colonization and ethics that my clients aren't allowed to, you know, unless it's a group, there's all, you know, they can't know each other. I'm not allowed to say their names, even their like stories, even though there's lines that we can there with an anonymity. But so there's ways that I almost try to practice that. I do a lot more couples and family work these days. Almost any teen I see, I'm going to work with the families of the siblings. So I think there are ways that I'm very, and I think I like couples so much in family because we're accessing each other to help each other. And this whole thread of support is so much harder when you're with one person. You're teaching them how to support each other and get support. And it's so interlocked to this one in their parts. And it's, again, a lot easier when I can get a couple to understand each other and support each other. And like, you know, it's like, oh, wow, okay. But I'm curious. I wonder what that thread might have been. Or
Yeah. So what I was thinking about, even as you're just talking now, is like, I think the biggest thread that you brought today was around psychological flexibility. And so it's just the concept of taking in new information, always learning new things, which is really, really big. In the context of chronic pain, like everything it sounds like you've done with your back pain, like you're seeking out new information. You're working with, you know, you've worked with a PT, a personal trainer, like you are and you're learning. I think learning is the biggest piece because that inherently does bring a sense of flexibility. When you know more, then you can expand more, you can move more. And our pain is very much the same way. Like when you know more about it, I mean, it is simple as the other day I was in the gym and we were rolling out and I got this nerve pain and I had such an intense pain to it. And usually, I mean, in the past, that would be like, oh, jump off, like done with this, can't do that. That was bad. I shouldn't have done that. And now it's like, oh, wait, you just actually like pressed a little too hard. Just lighten up a little bit, which, sorry, I'm like going in a tangent here, but what I also realized was the reason why I couldn't lighten up off of the foam roller before was because I didn't have the arm strength to do that. So if somebody were to say, oh, well, if you're going too hard, just lighten up. But I couldn't even verbalize. It was wrapped up with shame and even just a lack of understanding of my body. Like I didn't have the arm strength to do that. And so how can I lighten up? I can't even do that. But if you help me and you support me and you help move my body to where it needs to be, well, now I've created space for new understanding to come in. And that's a big, big part of psychological flexibility. So information, I think, is what you've brought into this conversation. And yeah, I think the piece I brought in was more that like communal support. And both of those things are needed together in order to build that psychological flexibility.
Yeah. And part of what, you know, you jump straight into reaction, right? And that's what we're trying to slow down, you know, like the just, you know, not having that flexibility to say, well, slow down, there's space here. What's going on? What do I need? Right? Multiple supports come in, you know, multiple parts of you. And then you're like, oh, and one of them is stronger and better and is able to say, wait, I can do this. Or you could ask for help. Hey, I can't move. Can you lift my body a little bit? Or you know, if you have the person there. So love what you're saying. I would say, like, thank you for naming it. And I used to use the word polycommittal, right? The idea that you could commit to multiple things. I have the frontal lobe that can hold, particularly when I'm not in a reactive space, that in this work, if God exists, God doesn't exist. It doesn't matter whether God exists or not, because I'll never know it. And also I've had some experiences that feel like it proves something is existing. And above all, whether it exists or not, how I hold that for my own psyche, and yes, believing something else more powerful, ancestor, spirit, trees, God, beings, holding that something is more powerful and more knowing than me, and I'm in a relationship to that, helps the psyche, right? So in a placebo realm, just knowing that, like, I want to do it and it also affects the way I live, I can actually hold all of those truths, even though some of them are very mutually exclusive, kind of at the same time, and say, this part of me needs this and this part of me needs this. And access those in different moments, and I don't have to choose one. I can have them all. And I think that that metaphor, analogy, whatever, can go to so much. And so one of my big things, and I even loved earlier, I was like, you know, my nickname is Ori. My intentional community name or fae name is either Ori. And I do think that's like the heart of both what I struggle with is, well, what is it? Do I buy the house? Do I not buy the house? Do I live in New York here? And I have this they less binary, multiple things in gender, multiple, like my spirit, as I say, is not one gender. It's probably lived as both. There's so much more going on. And that truths for me has allowed me as a therapist to really be very flexible, very accepting, very open, always more, all, you know, and I think that that is like a heart of what I'm talking about, because then there is learning, there is openness, there is, you know, when I, like severe acceptance is a phrase of mine these days. And as I say, acceptance doesn't mean you have to like it. You're just trying to hold a big enough container to be with it, to hang out with it, to get to know it.
Totally. Yes. And what I'm also hearing though for you is that there is safety in not having one answer. Mm-hmm. Like having multiple things be true at once is what helps you feel safe in your mind and body. Does that feel accurate?
Yes. And again, my psychological perspective is like, absolutely. And sometimes knowing and sometimes having that answer, but I can't have that answer all the time. Sometimes I'm in an experience where I'm like, this worked, this is my body. When it comes to chronic illness, even more of that, right? When it comes to my reactivity, maybe when it comes to things that are less safe to me, I feel more like, well, I need more space. But there are certain things to me that I do know. I do love art. I know when I return to art, I feel better. I do know. Again, stretching is a layered one. Like there are these things, and that's interesting too. It's that they're yes and, right? Again, and I think one of my biggest phrases is trusting the process. And I think that's this whole concept, which means trusting the bad too. At the end of your life, the worst thing that happened is part of the process. And the more that I think that is a state of being that I work a lot with clients, you know, because not only is that in a moment, having the trust we're talking about, maybe a little bit of experience of safety of, oh, wow, this is really bad, but I can contain this, I can hold this. You then start to experience more grounded core safety. And then part of that moves into my whole other thing as a humanistically trained therapist. I went to the University of West Georgia. This idea that, you know, we really studied, or this tradition really studied or at least presented human happiness, what makes people happy. And I talked about that earlier, like typically happier, healthier people have expressive practices in their life, right? And we could get into that. That's actually my logo and channels. But this place of trusting the process, and I say, as much as we're going to talk about mental illness and the bad and soothing and all that stuff and dissociation, I will eventually want to spend as much time talking about savoring, which seems like a simple concept, isn't easy. Hardwiring happiness and good emotions and the work it takes to build confidence and self-esteem and that whole idea. And I think sometimes when I'm having trust the process moments, I'm kind of not in a good place. And then some part of me is like, trust the process. And then I start to savor, identify, okay, it could be worse. Okay, if I trust the process, maybe even this stuff that doesn't feel good in the long run is actually going to end up being better, right? Classic trauma narrative work. It sucks now, but if you can get to a place where you can look back and not say that the trauma was good, right? But the work I've done has got me to a place where I can actually experience appreciating my back pain, appreciating that stuff, because it's taught me. And there's those things that I can also associate with that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for people listening, I mean, if you've made it this far, then I think you know what both of our hearts are. Like, one, we know we both seem to have an understanding of this stuff is complex, nuanced, layered, and that we're willing to kind of be in the mess. Not even kind of, we are willing to be in the mess to kind of help see our clients out on the other side. I think that's probably the main theme of all of this between the two of us, that the mess is required. It's just required. So whatever your mess is, whether it's trauma or chronic illness or relationship distress or all of the above, it is required. You cannot get through this life without mess. And if you do, you've missed out on a lot. Like, I don't know how else to say it. So it's not about trying to jump to the positive and saying, you know, but it is about, like, if you need some hope and you need to understand, like, why am I in it? One, knowing it's mandatory. We all have to go through whatever our version of it is. And if we stay with it and we don't dissociate and we don't cope negatively and we don't kind of do these escape tactics, then we will get to a place where we can find the positive in it.
Yes. I like, if I can build enough parts of me that are supporting me and knowing these core lessons, right? Knowing these kind of pieces that hold the flexibility, slowing down, trusting the process, you know, that I'm going to need to keep learning, that I'm going to F it up, that it's going to get messy, that life is going to keep traumatizing that. And as I say, like, early in my work, I would say, like, I'm a trauma therapist, and people would be like, do I have trauma? I don't know if I'm, you know, but it's like, whoa. And that's less now. I think people generally more understand a lot more about trauma. And it's like, our bodies through eons, our nervous system, our bodies are built to be traumatized. And I use the word a lot of times, learning, and really deep learnings, and both for good and bad. And I love, like, let's always be talking about the, you know, the layers and neutral learnings. But really, our bodies are built to remember the worst best. And I often say it's like cramming for a test 20 minutes before versus studying a week before. It's just a different type of learning. And then there's a whole protection system that is so important to understand that, yeah, we could spend a whole podcast on, of then what your body does when it gets triggered, right? When it senses a familiar, it's like, oh, let me open that Tupperware that I saved. And what's in the Tupperware? The chemicals, visit your body, right? The action you maybe take, did you run? Did you fight? And did it work or not? So do we want to do that again, or we don't want to do that, right? Did that, you know, that's what your body, that's how it learns. And so it opens that container, even though it might not be the same, it just might be a familiar sense of something, right? And so I won't go too much any deeper, but just this idea that, like, I don't know how to put it into words in a way that feels like fully embodied, but it's like the body is built to remember, and we don't get to escape that. And even if you had a great life, there was bad, you know, and your body's going to remember that in deeper. Not just even the idea of a great life is so, like, what, you were never scared. You never had an accident. You never, like, even if your family didn't traumatize you, like, you never got hurt, you know, it's just almost like you weren't in a body living. Like, it doesn't seem. And even that, what are people talking about when they're kind of saying, I don't have trauma, right? Oh, okay. What are we blocking? What are we associating? Because what I know the body is like, that feels, and I don't love a hole. It feels impossible. I imagine there can be some people because their nervous system. I think when we look at some of kind of, like, we get into, like, in neuroatypical, we start to see people whose nervous systems don't get as traumatized in these ways. And, you know, maybe as relationally in different ways, we could have a whole thing about, but yeah, so this is a different understanding.
Yeah. Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. Sometimes I think, you know, as a therapist in private practice, like, I get to choose my own schedule, and, you know, these are the things that help me sustain my body and my mind. And, you know, not everybody has that privilege with whatever work, you know, you've gone into. I think 9 to 5s are just killing us all. So it's something that we work on a lot, though, like, especially with COVID. I mean, that, talk about positive after the storm. Like a lot of folks have realized, like, wait, like 50, 60 hour weeks, like this was killing me, and are now finding work from home. Even if you are still working 40 hours a week from home, just the ability to like get up and go do your laundry for 2 minutes during the workday, like it makes you such a better worker and a better human. So hopefully we keep learning that lesson. I know a lot of companies have tried to kind of go back on a lot of this like work from home stuff, but I think a lot of companies are staying with it too. And it's a really good thing.
Yeah. I think maybe my two kind of wrap ups is one, I would put that in the model of the teens. I think one of the worst things, and good for some, right? And that depends on the parents, is that they have to spend 8 hours a day in school. Maybe they get an hour of free time. And even in the free time, then they have often requirements to do stuff, but at least it's a lot more fun, the art projects. And then they come home and they have hours of homework, especially if they're in honors, especially if they've got band practice after, especially if they're doing the things that are healthier, right? And to watch my teens cry and how torturous that is. And then they're being trained in that system. And even on the weekends, and it's like, yes, the reality is they're not getting as much, even a balanced diet training in expressing themselves and getting in touch with that and having the space to slow down and get in touch with that. And yet it's like, no, that's the whole model, is we're just going to give you so much that you don't get to be with that experience. And that is crushing in for them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I really appreciate it. I think you run a group for chronic illness. Is that or mm-hmm. something? Yeah, tell me a little. I just was like, my brain is like, oh, your whole thing is support. And so you are very like, yeah, groups are critical. And so there's something there. I'm just like, I guess I appreciate that. Like you're building a model that represents what you deepest
believe. Yeah. Well, in all honesty, it is very hard to get people interested in groups. So to get people who like want to show up with messiness around other people they don't know is really a tall ask. So I did have a group running for about 9 months it was like just two people, then it was four people, then it was down to two. So all that to say, I don't have like a time at this moment, like a day and a time, because it's dissolved. I do still advertise it because I would love to get this group up and running. I know the power of groups. And so if people, if you're listening to this and you're in Georgia, like, please, like, let me show you, like, just give me an ounce of trust and let me show you how healing it can be to be around other people and to show up in your messiness and in your wins and success. But yeah, the group is, it's trauma and chronic illness, because chronic illness is inherently a trauma, especially in this society where we don't have support and we have a fucked up medical system and all of that. So it's about trauma and chronic illness. And we do some somatic work, but more so than that, it's just a lot of processing and education, kind of learning about the how pain works in the body and how you show up and respond to pain, and then, you know, what kind of values is a lot of acceptance and commitment therapy, and as well as somatic experiencing. So right now it's virtual, but because my in-person space, just it's not conducive for a group. But yeah, one day I'd love to kind of get back in person. And there's healing on in both aspects. I actually love virtual work, but there's also something really beautiful about being in person.
I my experiences with groups, I ran a free queer and trans teen group, and you know, they were there, but then getting them to come, and I even gave the like, you don't have to be part of it, you know, but then that it just was hard. It, you know, it's, I think there's just, and especially with the model of what you're talking about, is like, yes, people, yeah, like the, I, there's even like, I, we want to dissociate from the pain dealing with those things, right? So like going to a group and having to share that is layered, you know, having to hold that for other people is layered, especially if we have our own and we're at our capacity. And maybe it's a little safer to do that individually with one and slow and know it's about us. And so there's, but it's like, right, it fits the model of that's a lot, right?
Yeah.
I think if I was like, oh, if I compare what my model is or these things, it's like, my such is this idea of like having the space to listen to your body, to slow down, do that thing we're talking about. Okay, feelings, thought, right? That model. But then to realize that it's more than just talking to me, right? Like the action, right? Do you want to, you know, do you want to do something with this? Do you want to paint with this? Even if you're not always choosing that moment, just coming in and there's all these choices around you, literally to the point I say right away, you want to sit in the rock lounge or do you want to sit on one of the two couches, right? And already it's like choice. And if that goes back to psychological flexibility, it's like having the reminder that you have choice to me is like, is my model in a way. And sometimes just putting that in front of people, literally there's a little thing that says there's always four activities that you could do. The mutual core, write a letter to those who are in jail is one of my things. For the forest defenders, right? Like if that's going to do something for you and if that's, but it's just like you, there's a little, like this like list of choices. Like here's some expressive arts activities that you could do.
Yeah. Which I, I do. I love, I think you do really infuse. I mean, when I was reading your website, like there's a lot of just community energy in what you do. So it was really, I just loved talking with you today. And yeah, there was an energy there that we kept going and I loved it.
I really appreciate it too. I think it, you know, it, you, even when I did the podcast, I had no idea what the other chronic illness till I got to your question. And it was just this kind of like, right? Like spirit for me was like, yep, exactly. This isn't just an open talk about yourself. It's had, it has a theme that like, I know is a piece of work for me and how much work happened here and feel really grateful. Yeah. And so, and even just like watching myself, that the piece of me, like, I feel I'm walking with like a sense of pride. And I was like, that I'm aware that I'm growing a capacity to take care of myself. And I was able to literally witness that in this like kind of, you know, way. And I'm storing that and I'm savoring that, putting that in my core, right? How can I represent something on my planet? Well, I'll put a bunch of cups there. I'll put a tincture fountain that magically squirts whatever tincture I need, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I love that so much. I so much loved your vulnerability and sharing with me. That allowed me to share more too on this podcast. So thank you.
One more piece with you. I was curious when we did the light, I wouldn't even call it the meditation, that core piece and went back there. Is there something you place there? Is there something you'd want to place there? Like what would you want to place there as a holder? And again, it could be five things, right? What would you want to place there? Or did you to really hold that place for yourself?
That's a beautiful question. Let me sit with that for a moment. You know, the thing that always comes back up for me is just being able to receive. That's what I'm always working on, is how to receive. I'm trying to figure out how to put that into like a core imagery or thought. I guess what's coming to mind right now is a waterfall. And I tend to be on that top pouring out, and it's really nice to be at the bottom, and the pressure of the water kind of just, you know, the waterfall, like deep pressure, it can be so healing, somatically healing. Think everyone knows weighted blankets, like we just love those. And so same kind of concept, weighted blanket, like receiving that pressure, I think is something that I just did not grow up knowing how to receive. I only knew how to give. So being okay and seeing the beauty in receiving. And if you have a thought on how to summarize that or paraphrase that, I'm more than open to that.
Yeah, I often say trust the process, right? You can change it later, you can update it. That's the whole point of core work, is to continue. I call it re-encountering the core, to go back to that place. If you're having a good moment when you were on that roller, like in that moment, you could be like, okay, how do I add a little metaphorical image to this? And right. And maybe it is literally just like this hand pushing up, or a really strong hand that's like a stone coming out of the waterfall. That's just a reminder of that memory. And so the work is to revisit it and add it and paint it and maybe get a photo, maybe make a screensaver, right? Like, you know, explore these different ways. Maybe on your next vacation, or go to Windwinder or whatever, find the waterfall and have that moment. And yeah, like I was imagining you under the waterfall, like it beating down on you. And it could be like, oh God, it's doing it, you know, and, or you kind of go in slowly and you're like, wait, this feels good. Oh wait, that's the spot, right? And this kind of like idea of like being on the bottom side versus the pourer. The spirit is very like, in my mind, like it's the water bearer that's like, they would say it's querying, but like it's both taking down from spirit and pouring back. And this kind of like being in both of that and more of a balance seems very there. But that's like it.
So fascinating, because I'm actually an Aquarius and I just don't know much about I don't know much about astrology. It's not my thing. So I just love that you just brought that up.
To me, when I did my value card, I was a little shocked. Spirituality was my top one. And I, in a weird way, like, it's like, I don't know, identify, now I do, but for years, I didn't identify as very spiritual, but everyone around me would. And to me, it's just like, it's just how it is. It's like, it's not something that I'm like choosing or being. It's just like, you know, and even or something earlier, like what really helps me lay down and stretch is to light a candle and make it a little bit more spiritual, right? Which means deeper, to a place that helps me create the container where I'm like, hey, Orion, whoa, worship yourself, love yourself, trust the process, right? That candle and that container of what I probably call safer. And maybe that's what spiritual is. It's a little bit safer because there's spirits helping me on the other side, my ancestors, right? Whatever the rollers of spirit, right? All things, you know, I'm, you know, so there's something there, but, yeah. So, yeah. And it's just, yeah, we can get into that whole other channel, but yeah, that was my highest value card. I was like, it's something that I have spent a lot of time thinking about.
Yeah, it does. That's what values do. It's not about like choosing the right one. It's about trying values on and then seeing how that feels and how that fits. And then if that fits well, then you keep moving in that direction until it no longer does, if that's the case. But yeah.
I know we keep hearing. So like, this is the image of polyhedron.
Oh, yes.
It's the idea of holding these different images, holding the reactivity, holding the keys, holding this is the reactive self. You know, that's a reaction window of tolerance. The birth of mental health, that one moment you're like, oh, wait, I'm reacting. Well, what happens next? Do you go back here and judge and analyze and solve? Or do you try to keep extending out into the window of tolerance? Viewing further. This is the reactive self with the Tupperware containers, right? This is the core self and how that kind of feels. And so this book is 66 pages. And I think for what we were talking about, like groups, like this is my part of my thing. Here's the knowledge. I mean, you know, it's in here, like this is the support. This is the other that I think helps some of this work. And it's a full of client artwork and all sorts of things on a lot of stuff we talked about. And I'm currently printing them. And as like one of my friends, right, showing to others was like, just take all the keys and put them. And the end was like, my bestie said, just put the answer right here.
I love that.
Yeah.
And is that for sale on your website?
It is for sale on my website. I often say there's also a secret Easter egg link. If you just click, it says guidebook, it'll open up a PDF. So just like find that. But it is for sale on paper. I find that a lot of people find it paper, and I'm actually currently printing them right now. Like I said, email me whatever's easiest for you. But yeah, it's on my website, and, I'm currently actually, my summer goal is to create videos for it. Cause I think just, I love you to the YouTube. Like it, I know certain people like me, I'd rather watch a video. Podcasts are great, but like, you know, it's just that. So that's my summer goal, is to slow down enough and to record videos about it.
Yeah, maybe we can do some body doubling there, because it's always hard to get motivated. But yeah, thank you so much for like this whole conversation. I feel rejuvenated. I feel like filled. That's what this podcast usually does for me. It's the selfish reason why I do it. Along with just providing all of this as free resource to people who are wanting this information.
I really appreciated getting to know you, and this was a lot more lively and fun than I was maybe expecting. You know, I never know. And I love in this moment, I'm not having pain, and just like watching that journey of starting without it, getting it, acting, and even having to like move from my lay down position. And then now I'm not, it's just, I'm like aware, I'm there. That feels good. And I'm like savoring that. And I love doing core work, so I'm glad we got to do that.
Yeah, that was awesome. I appreciate you. Well, thank you so much.
Talk to you soon. Enjoy.
Yeah, you too. Bye. Thanks for listening. If you learned something new today, consider writing it down in your phone notes or journal and make that new neural pathway light up. Better yet, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a DM on Instagram, email me, or leave a voice memo for us to play on the next show. The way you summarize your takeaways can be the perfect little soundbite that someone else might need. And lastly, leaving a review really helps others find this podcast, so please do if you found this episode helpful. And P.S., clicking subscribe ensures you'll be here for the next episode. See you then.